Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, September 6th, 2020. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope you all had a great week. Got a lot to talk about on this edition of the Weekender, so I'm going to give you a list of topics and then we'll get right into it. So we've got Impact Wrestling results and Eric Young becoming the brand new Impact Wrestling World Heavyweight Champion. We have 205 Live results. We have all 16 competitors now confirmed for the Ring of Honor Pure Title Tournament. We have new content on the National Wrestling Alliance YouTube channel. We have a show tonight on independentwrestling.tv, Black Label Pro's Through Being Cool event will happen tonight at 9 p.m. on independentwrestling.tv. I have predictions on the show today. I also have a recap of the latest Being the Elite episode titled You're Out of the Elite. Obviously, we've had Dynamite as well as AEW All Out since this show, but there's still a lot going on in this episode to talk about. And like always, I have my recommended show to watch on independentwrestling.tv as well as a free YouTube match recommendation for y'all to check out. So without any further ado, let's jump right into it. Starting off with my recommended show on IWTV, and this week, that is PWF Colby Carino's Backyard Birthday Brawl. So the company is called PWF, also known as Premier Wrestling Federation, and the show is titled Colby Carino's Backyard Birthday Brawl. This show happened on August the 22nd of this year, so just around a week or so ago. And these are the matches to expect if you want to check it out. We have Bossman Boz taking on Cameron Hill, Jackson Drake versus Jay Malachi versus Lindsey Pike versus Flex Simmons versus Antonio Grace versus Bojack in a multi-person match, obviously. We have the Step Brothers versus the First Generation. Also, PWF Unified Tag Team titles on the line, as we have the Sioux Dudes with Attitude, the team of Joe Harrison and Mikey Fulp, taking on the Dawson Brothers, Zane and Dave Dawson, as well as the team of the International Superstars, which is Blanco Loco and Dream Girl Ellie. We had the PWF Undisputed title match between Mason Miles, Patrick Scott, and TJ Moss in a three-way. And in the main event, we had a six-man match, the Ugly Ducklings, the team of Rob Killjoy, Lance Lude, and Colby Carino, taking on the team of the George Nasty Boys, which is George South, Timmy Lou Retton, and White Mike. And as always, I'll highlight some of the talents here on this show, starting off with the main event, the Ugly Ducklings. I love the team of Rob Killjoy and Lance Lude. We also have Colby Carino, who the show is named after, of course, and we're going to talk a little bit more about Colby Carino as we go a little bit deeper into the show, as a matter of fact. I also like the team of the Jim Nasty Boys, along with George South. The Jim Nasty Boys, really talented team. The Ugly Ducklings, really talented team. And two teams that really, I feel like, don't really get as much notoriety as they probably should. Both teams are very, very talented. I've seen the Ugly Ducklings in person a few times, mainly in like the Chattanooga, Tennessee area, and they're also incredible with merchandise. Like they have really great merch at their merch table, and they have kind of like a Mighty Ducks type theme, like loosely as well, which I love because I'm a huge mark for the 90s movies, that Mighty Ducks trilogy. I mean, it fits my age demographic perfectly. A lot of you listening to this either know what I'm talking about or are completely lost of what I'm talking about right now because you might be a little too young. But yeah, I like the Ugly Ducklings. I like what they bring to the table. Both teams bring something totally different to the table as far as like what you normally see, especially for guys that don't have like the best physique in the world. They still do everything you would want to see in a pro wrestling match in 2020. Kind of a looks can be deceiving type scenario for both teams, but they do a lot of really, really great stuff. Some other people I can highlight on this show, the Dawson brothers, great tag team, Zane and Dave Dawson, cool to see them out here. And, you know, Mason Miles, Patrick Scott, TJ Moss, great match for the Undisputed title. So a lot of great talent on this show and a lot of people that I haven't highlighted very often here on this podcast. This is a show that I've recommended because there's going to be some newer names and faces that you may not be familiar with, and a lot of really good wrestling and a backyard venue. And it was Colby Carino's birthday. For those of you who don't know, Colby Carino is the son of Steve Carino, who I saw wrestle first in ECW. I was actually a really big fan of his in ECW. And Colby definitely has a similar look to his dad. I've seen Colby wrestle for a little while now, but he's just now kind of starting to pop up more and more in like kind of higher profile type stuff, as once again, we'll get to a little bit later on this show. So once again, my recommended show this week is PWF's Colby Carino's Backyard Birthday Brawl. It's available right now on independentwrestling.tv. Moving on, I have a recommended match to check out on YouTube for free. This week I've chosen New Japan Pro Wrestling's Will Ospreay vs. Amazing Red. This match happened at the Super J Cup 2019, so last year. And the reason I've chose it is because I don't talk a ton of New Japan on this show. I cover like the really, really big stuff here on the weekend or for New Japan. But lately I've been doing free YouTube match recommendations for Ring of Honor. But now that there's a bit more to talk about with Ring of Honor, I figured I'd change it up a bit and throw out a match with two of my favorite performers in the world. Amazing Red is somebody, I've talked about it on the show plenty of times, but he's one of the main reasons I got into independent wrestling at the time that I did. I was aware of it before him, but he was the first one that I was really captivated by, and I was like, wow, this is stuff that I'm not seeing at all on like WWE TV, you know, at that time. And he was also a big reason that I started tuning into NWA TNA pay-per-views regularly back in the Asylum days in Nashville. So it's one of those things where, like, Amazing Red, I feel like, doesn't get the credit he deserves. I mean, he's very well-known and very respected amongst, like, the talent. Like, I'd imagine most people that are making a full-time living in professional wrestling right now have been inspired in one way or another by Amazing Red. I just feel like, as from like a fan perspective, you know, he never did anything with the WWE. He had some great runs with TNA, but he was never like their world champion. He did hold their X Division title and I believe their tag team titles a few times, if I remember correctly. But Amazing Red is somebody that you know was a clear inspiration to someone like Will Ospreay. And Will Ospreay is who I consider to be the best high-flying talent in the world, but the fact that he's put on so much weight lately and stuff in size to be more like a credible heavyweight level wrestler as well, I really like what he's done. Like, Will Ospreay is one of the most valuable wrestlers that, you know, obviously he does a lot with New Japan, and I think he's a great fit in New Japan. But as far as, like, in the States, if a company like AEW, for instance, had Will Ospreay, I think that'd be a humongous addition to their roster, especially because he's still young. And he's already got all this experience and these incredible matches he's put together. And this is one of them. This is a dream match for me, you know, something like Will Ospreay versus Amazing Red. I thought it was really cool. And they're still performing at a super high level last year. Obviously, Ospreay, you would expect that from because he's in the mix currently right now in multiple companies, and he's one of the top names, you know, not signed to a major, a major U.S. promotion. But Amazing Red to still be doing it, especially because he announced his retirement a couple years ago, I remember, and obviously he didn't stick to that retirement, but I think the main reason was because of all these injuries that have been building up over his career. Very high-risk, high-flying type style, very innovative style, especially for his time. I mean, I'll be honest, like, I remember the first time I saw Amazing Red wrestle, I went onto some wrestling message boards, and I was just, like, putting topic posts out there, just like, hey, has anyone seen this guy, Amazing Red? Like, he's doing stuff that I've never seen Rey Mysterio do. That was, like, the immediate comparison I made, and I consider Rey Mysterio to be the best high-flying, you know, masked luchador wrestler ever, right? And not that Amazing Red is a masked luchador, but you get the point, stylistically, especially comparatively at that time. And I remember going on the message boards and being like, this Amazing Red guy is doing stuff I've never even seen Rey Mysterio do. And then I learned more about him and people recommended other matches for me to check out. And I started watching his stuff with Ring of Honor and became a really big fan. And once again, I'm just recommending this match for anybody who wants to check out a true pioneer in high-flying wrestling in the current, you know, the current king of it, in my opinion. A match between Will Ospreay and Amazing Red. It's available for free right now. Just go on the New Japan YouTube channel and search for it, and I think you'd really enjoy it. Let me know what you think about these matches that I recommend and these shows that I recommend. Feel free to drop me a comment here, you know, on the Patreon service right here at Fightful Select. If you're listening to this, you know, right here on the page, feel free to leave a comment. Let me know if you're liking these recommendations, and you can also shoot me a message on Twitter. My handle is at fighttalk_. That's FIGHTTALK_. And I'm looking forward to getting some feedback from y'all about this stuff. Because the reason I do the recommendations is because I want people to just kind of be able to expand their knowledge of independent wrestling and kind of what's going on outside of the major U.S. promotions. And what's really cool about this, in my opinion, is there's so many names that I've brought up over the last, you know, year and a half, close to 2 years, I guess, that I've been doing the Weekender. A lot of the names that I've been talking about are now the big names in AEW, the big names in NXT, the big names getting signed by Ring of Honor, the big names getting signed by Impact, you know. So it's cool to kind of get ahead of that and be a fan of these people before they start showing up in these major promotions and stuff like that. Because some of them, it's wild, because some of them, you know, it's very hit or miss, but some of them, you know, get signed to these big companies and they wind up becoming major superstars. Some of them wind up signing and you wind up looking back and really romanticizing this type of stuff, going back and watching, you know, their previous work before they got signed, because you're like, man, this, artistically speaking, some of these guys were doing way more enjoyable work on the indies than what they're able to do. So it's just one of those things where, once again, I give these recommendations because I hope that I can kind of just expand horizons a little bit and try to give you guys some recommendations based on stuff that I think is good. So that's that for this week. And let's move into the topics. The biggest topic this week is definitely going to be the result of the main event of Impact. So let's go through the card real quick, and then I'll get to that. Started off with RVD and Sami Callihan. Of course, RVD had Katie Forbes with him. The finish came where Sami Callihan winds up pinning RVD after like an exchange of a bunch of pinfall attempts. RVD attacks Sami Callihan after the match. So they're doing more. There's like a bigger feud building like continually with Sami Callihan and Rob Van Dam. So we'll see where that winds up going. We see Hernandez beat Fall of Bond in arm wrestling contest backstage. And Reno Scum is trying to... they're basically trying to team up with Hernandez and that kind of stuff. We also get some Wrestle House stuff that I'm just not going to comment on because it's Wrestle House. Like I haven't heard really one person say anything really positive about Wrestle House since it's been going on. I will say like Jake something, AKA Cousin Jake, who I'm going to talk about a little bit later on the show. I'm a really big fan of his and he's a part of it. I don't mean disrespect to the talent involved. It's just the actual concept of Wrestle House and the way it's been presented. It just really isn't worth diving into each week. I'm just going to be totally honest. But I will say that I do enjoy the Johnny Swinger stuff usually because he's just such a parody of himself that it's become really funny to me. Moving on with the matches, we had Rhino defeating Reno Scum. Gets the win with the gore. We see that Heath Slater was actually disguised as a cameraman during this. And he celebrates with Rhino after the match. And Scott D'Amore is like chasing after him. It's continuing the whole Heath Slater is a free agent and not signed by the company, but he's trying to get signed storyline. We also see backstage the Good Brothers talking to Dez and Wentz, but they kind of like decline the Good Brothers' advice. We then get a match between the Rascals and Ace Austin and Madman Fulton, where the Rascals win after pinning. Dez pins Ace with a moonsault. I don't like Ace taking all these pinfalls. He's been losing a lot lately, and I feel like it's a real 180 contrast from the position he was in heading into Slammiversary, and I don't like that. I do like the Rascals, though. Like, don't get me wrong. It's just Madman Fulton's there, too. I feel like he could be taking these pinfalls, and at least it keeps some of the shine on Ace Austin, at least, because maybe I'm just stuck on it. Maybe I need to move past it, but Ace Austin had a great X Division Championship reign. He, in my opinion, should have won the world title at Slammiversary, although we're in a good spot with the title now, which we'll get to. But I just feel like he's really getting lost in the mix, and I don't think a tag team with him and Madman Fulton is really the spot to be in. Like, worst case scenario, he should still be in the X Division title mix and having great matches there. I don't want to see him in a scenario where it's just him and Madman Fulton, and they're just like this middle-of-the-road tag team. Now, on the flip side, the Rascals are fantastic. All three of those guys, Wentz, Dez, and Trey, are all incredible. So I don't have a problem with them winning the match. I really more so have a problem with Ace Austin is the one who keeps taking the pinfall in these losses week after week, and it's devaluing Ace Austin, in my opinion. And I think they should be doing the opposite with Ace Austin. They should be investing in him. He should be winning. He should be looking good. He's a young kid with incredible talent, a different look, a different, you know, kind of cadence in the way that he speaks and carries himself. He can be a really big, quote-unquote, kind of homegrown star for Impact Wrestling, and I feel like he's getting lost in the mix with a former WWE guy in Madman Fulton, and I think they need to figure that out. We get an open challenge from the Motor City Machine Guns. The Rascals wind up accepting that. Madman and Ace attack, but Motor City helps out, so, you know, the babyfaces all, you know, help each other out, and the match is agreed to, so we are going to get next week, the Rascals versus the Motor City Machine Guns, which I think will be really, really, really good. That's going to be awesome. We get Rahit Raju looking at himself with the X Division Championship. TJP wants a title shot against him, so it looks like that will happen in the near future. We get some stuff between Deonna Purrazzo and Jordynne Grace, which then prompts the return of Tennille Dashwood. So we'll see how long she stays in Impact Wrestling this time. She seems to really, like, bounce around the promotions a lot. It's like you see her somewhere for, like, a few weeks, and then she disappears. And then she's, like, out of the country completely. And then I see her, like, posting on Instagram. Or not Instagram. I don't really use Instagram. But on, like, Twitter, I see random stuff where she's posting from, like, all over the world. And, I mean, I'm a fan of Tennille. I think she's gorgeous. I think she's great in the ring. I liked her as Emma in the WWE. And I liked her in Ring of Honor for the short time she was there with Lifeblood. But I just don't know. I don't know how invested you can get in Tennille Dashwood, because she seems to just kind of bounce around as often as she does and just disappears as often as she does. But maybe they have her locked down for a contract. I don't know. I don't know all the specifics there. But what I will say is it is interesting to see Tennille Dashwood here. And we also had Susie and Kylie Rae involved in this as well. Obviously, Kylie Rae and Deonna Purrazzo is being built up for the title. But also having Jordynne Grace and Tennille Dashwood and Susie and some of these others, Taya Valkyrie hasn't been as involved because she's been a part of Wrestle House. But they have a really, really good women's cast there. Even after losing Tessa Blanchard, who I've said it a trillion times, I'll say it again, I think she's the best female wrestler in the world, Tessa Blanchard. But she was mainly wrestling men towards the end of her run with Impact anyway. She wasn't really a part of the women's roster as far as, like, the knockouts division, I should say. But even with her gone, and then the addition of Tennille Dashwood, the addition of Deonna Purrazzo, the rise and the steady, you know, push of Jordynne Grace, you know, with the title and even keeping her in that mix, even without it, they have a great cast of women's talent there at Impact Wrestling. And it's only getting better with the additions of people like Tennille Dashwood, so that was great. We then have Brian Myers being interviewed backstage, and Moose asks if he's seen EC3. So, you know, obviously Moose and EC3 is a main storyline there with the TNA title and all that stuff. And Brian Myers still being treated like a big deal in Impact, as far as I see it. Like, I kind of feel like he's already kind of somewhere between like a mid-carder and main eventer. Like he obviously debuted immediately in a world title match, but he lost that match. Since then, he's looked pretty good, and they at least have been spotlighting him every week. And I'm a big fan of his. I'm a huge fan of the Major Figure Wrestling pod and what Myers and Cardona do for like that whole kind of community of collectors and stuff like that. And they've carved out a great niche, whatever you want to say, for themselves. On the internet, and I think that Cardona and Myers, Cardona I won't talk about because that's, you know, AEW related, but Myers, and not that I love AEW, by the way, it's just we don't really cover it on this show, but outside of being the Elite, but Myers, I do really want to see him get a push, like give him an actual chance as a singles wrestler without being tied to Cardona, without being, you know, on some giant losing streak, without being positioned as a total jobber who just, you know, you can't get behind. Like, give this guy a chance. It's sink or swim, right? Like, either he can deliver or he can't. And I think he can, but give him that chance. And I think Impact Wrestling is giving him that chance. It's just, you know, there's a lot of new faces in Impact and a lot of returning faces in Impact. A lot of people they're trying to push that are homegrown. And there's people that are missing that I think should be a part of the show, and there's people in Wrestle House that I think shouldn't be a part of Wrestle House, and there's a lot of There's a lot to consider when it comes to Impact Wrestling's current roster, but I don't want to see Brian Myers get lost in that, and I feel like they at least have some sort of plans to try, which I like. And the main event, we had Eric Young defeating Eddie Edwards to become the new Impact World Champion. I love this. He gets the win after hitting Eddie. So the referee's distracted. He hits Eddie with a hockey mask right in the head. Eddie folds. I love the way he sold that. And then Eric Young hits the pile driver. His pile driver is so nice. The way people have been selling for his pile driver has been great. And he gets the win to become the new champion, which I love. It's been a long time since Eric Young has been the Impact World Champion. Years. And obviously he was working for WWE, but I mean, it's still been a long time, and it's cool to see him at the top of this company, especially after his WWE run, where he was just completely misused, in my opinion. Like, the sanity stuff had potential in NXT, and then they just gave up completely on him. So it's cool to see Eric Young getting a real second life here in Impact Wrestling. And after the match, he continued to beat down Eddie Edwards. He basically kept working on his leg and put him in like this like ankle, not an ankle lock, put him in like a leg lock, like a leg lock type. I'll just call it leg like type maneuver. I don't know technically what he had him in, but basically he's wrenching at Eddie Edwards' leg, and Eddie Edwards is like screaming for help. And this is also Eric Young had worked on the leg throughout the match, and obviously Eric Young has built up this thing with Rich Swann where he's been doing the same type of stuff. They're just establishing this whole maniac character for Eric Young. His whole thing is that it's basically his whole plan. Like, it's a, there's a slogan he keeps saying, and I had it on the tip of my tongue. By design, I believe, is what he's been saying. Like everything has been by design. The way he came back in that at Slammiversary, and the way that he took out Rich Swann, and the way that Rich Swann, you know, did his retirement speech, and then Eric Young just beat him to holy hell, right? And like, I mean, it's been very, very well played, and they've made Eric Young infinitely more interesting in just a couple months in comparison to all the years he was with WWE. I mean, it's been really, really great to see him get to back to this spot. And he's a guy I've had the pleasure of meeting in person, especially because I lived in Nashville as long as I did, and he lived in Nashville for as long as he did. And I would see him at, like, indie shows and, like, Preds games and stuff like that, and he was always super nice. And he's just a guy that you really get behind if you meet him. You know, he's a good dude, and it's just one of those things where, like, I'm just very, very happy to see him win this championship. The only downside is it happened at the same time as NXT, because NXT and Impact were going head-to-head on Tuesday, and they will be again this week. And I think a lot of people probably would have tuned in to check this out, but tuned in to NXT instead because, you know, they had a world title match as well, a four-way Iron Man match that a lot of people were buzzing about. So it's one of those things where, like, I hope it wasn't too overshadowed, but I really, really feel great for Eric Young, and I think I feel like this is kind of the long term kind of play they had in mind at Slammiversary, was to not give Eric Young the spot right then, but to reestablish him and rebuild him as a legitimate maniac and a real, real, you know, threat and contender and potential champion. And now that he's there, I hope he holds the belt for a while, and I hope we get some really good stories and feuds out of it. I'd imagine we'll get something between him and Rich Swann sooner than later, whenever Swann's, you know, able to, like, return to the ring and all that. That also opens the door for his stuff, more stuff with him and Willie Mack. Even though Willie Mack's been on a bit of a losing streak, I'd like to see him and Eric Young run it back soon, especially considering the two of them had a match on Impact a few weeks ago that I wasn't able to watch because the broadcast kept dropping off of Twitch. So, and I don't know if it was Impact's fault or Twitch's fault, but it's just really bad timing because basically technical difficulties while trying to watch the match I was the most looking forward to that night, which was Eric Young and Willie Mack. So once again, opens up a lot of opportunities for Eric Young. There's obviously an opportunity for a rematch with him and Eddie Edwards, and there's just a lot of stuff they can do. And so I'll just wrap that up by saying love it. Very happy for Eric Young. And if you haven't seen this already, go check it out. We need to support guys like Eric Young, I feel like. And yeah, I think Impact made a really good decision putting the world championship on Eric Young. And he's exclusive to Impact as well. So it's like, you know, you can put all your eggs in this basket. He's a reliable guy who's over, who has good matches, who has a history in the company. He's a credible champion, and you know he's going to be there for a while. So all great stuff. Moving on to 205 Live. We got three matches this week instead of what's been kind of the regular two, although we had three last week as well. But started off with Aria Daivari defeating Tahuti Miles, gets the win with the Hammerlock Lariat. After that, we had Mansoor defeating Colby Carino. I had mentioned Colby Carino earlier in my match recommendation for IWTV. So big week for him. And Colby, I mean, he looks so much like his dad. It's kind of cool, though, to be honest. Like, I like that he's doing it. For those of you who might not know, it's kind of like, it's very similar to the look that CM Punk had when he debuted in the WWE on, like, the WWE CW brand. Very similar type look. But I like it. And it reminds me so much of his dad. He looks like his dad. His gear looks like his dad. I mean, everything. Uses some of the same moves and stuff. And I believe it was Drew Gulak on commentary during this match who was talking about seeing Colby, like, during training and all that stuff, pretty much since day one of his career. So, really cool. And obviously, Colby Carino has the tie to his dad, Steve Carino, who I believe still works for the WWE as a producer, if I'm not mistaken. I get a little murky on that stuff because of, like, the furloughs and firings and all that stuff that happened a few months ago. I can't remember exactly who's there and who isn't all the time. But I think Steve Carino is still around. And even if he isn't, I love that Colby Carino is getting a chance here, and he's continuing to build his name on the independent scene, and he will land in a major promotion. He'd be really cool to see pop up in AEW, too. I want to see more second-generation guys who didn't get a chance in WWE get a chance in AEW. I like to see someone like Joe Henning, who was Curtis Axel in WWE, who never really got a chance, to get a chance in AEW. You know, stuff like that. I think it's cool that they're giving Brian Pillman Jr. a chance, and they might even give David Benoit, Chris Benoit's son, the one who survived, the one who, I don't want to get into all that. I get emotional just bringing that whole topic up, but David looks just like Chris, and he wants to be a pro wrestler, and he loves pro wrestling, and it's going to be a really touchy thing if he does get a chance in a major promotion. But I think AEW will probably give him that chance at some point. And I feel like they seem to feel like he's ready for it. They don't want him to go out there and, like, because you're putting a lot of risk in it with that name. And I don't know if he can call himself Benoit, or he wants to be Chris Benoit Jr., which I just don't think that that's going to happen. But that's all to say, you know, I like seeing kind of the rise of this whole new generation of second-generation wrestlers. And Colby Carino is one of them, and he's been impressive in the little bit that I've been able to see him so far. Mansoor wound up getting the win with a cool move. I think we talked about it a couple weeks ago, but he basically does it's like a one-winged angel into a Death Valley driver, kind of. It's cool how he hits it. He's got a pretty cool move set, and he's improved significantly, in my opinion, over time. And he isn't just like one of the guy who, you know, randomly wins in Saudi Arabia. He's, you know, becoming a legitimate WWE superstar, and he's done very well for himself on 205 Live. They keep pushing him, and he's solid. And I liked his match with Colby. It was fairly short, but it's promising. It's a perfect use of 205 Live. Like I say it every single episode of this show, 205 Live doesn't have a lot of stakes attached to it. It's got a lot of solid wrestlers and a lot of solid wrestling, though, even though you're not really missing out if you don't watch the show. And it's just one of those things where, like, if you have a show like this, why not put out people like Mansoor and Tahuti Miles, Colby Carino, all the people I've mentioned, Daivari, who of course is also, you know, his brother Aria Daivari. We had, the main event, Ever-Rise taking on Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan. Ever-Rise is a perfect example of this. Like, they're a tag team that probably wouldn't be doing anything or being getting used at all on Raw or SmackDown currently, or NXT, really. But they have a chance on 205 Live to get better as a team, get over, you know, become, get the fans familiar with them. They pop up in NXT occasionally, but at some point they'll probably get, like, an actual NXT run at the world titles. I don't know if they'll become the champions, but this is all preparing them for that, and they have the time to do it here on 205 Live. Once again, it's a perfect use of the time. This was a no contest because Legado del Fantasma attacked and the match got thrown out, and that just goes more to my point of perfect use of time. And the only real major storyline going on 205 Live, the only major storyline that's transcending the show itself, where Legado del Fantasma, the team of Joaquin Wild, Raul Mendoza, and their leader, the Cruiserweight champion, Santos Escobar, I think that what they've been doing is great. I think all three guys are super talented in the ring. I think Escobar's a great Cruiserweight champion, and it's so good what they're doing that, you know, they're getting time on NXT as well with Legado del Fantasma and Escobar, which is also helping out guys like Shane Strickland or Isaiah Scott. Sorry, his name was Shane Strickland on the indies. Isaiah Swerve Scott, who I think will continue to wrestle Escobar because he pinned him recently in a multi-man match. It's one of those things where, like, even if Swerve is kind of relegated, if you want to call it that, to 205 Live, because of this feud with Escobar and because of how good this has all been on 205 Live, I'd imagine that's a big reason why it's getting as much time on NXT, on USA Network. And in a scenario like that, everyone wins. And once again, it's a perfect use of having 205 Live. So, all good stuff. Nothing I can complain about. Solid wrestling and, excuse me, and another solid episode of 205 Live. Moving on, we have some more Ring of Honor news. Last week, I talked about the Pure title tournament, and we had a lot of the competitors announced, but now we have the full 16-man field, and tomorrow, we're going to get the brackets. So, on the next episode of the Weekender, so next Sunday, I will talk about the actual brackets, and we'll go through that. I'll do some bracketology. I'll try to actually, I'll go through the whole bracket, and I'll actually do like a March Madness style thing where I kind of pick all the winners all the way through until we get to who I think is going to become the next Pure champion. And I say next because this title obviously used to exist, but it's been defunct for quite a while now, like at least a decade, but or around that, something like that. It's been a long time. But yeah, as far as the competitors, we have the full list. From Ring of Honor, we have PJ Black, Dalton Castle, Delirious, Jonathan Gresham, Kenny King, Jay Lethal, Tracy Williams, Silas Young, and Josh Woods. From New Japan and or free agents, we have Dave Finley, Rocky Romero, and Matt Sydal. And for the independent competitors, I almost said independent contractors, which is also accurate. That was a whole thing with WWE this week with TikTok and Twitter, or sorry, TikTok and Twitch and YouTube and Cameo and all that stuff. I'm going to stay off that for this. We might revisit that in a few weeks if the situation gets worse, but I got to let that play out a little bit before I give like real comments on that. But as far as the independent competitors, we have Tony Deppen, Russ Taylor, Fred Yehi, and Wheeler Yuta. So, we also do know that it has been announced that Matt Sydal and Delirious will fight each other in the first round. So that is something that we do know. We know that the alternates are going to be Dak Draper and Brian Johnson in case they need to, if somebody falls out due to injury or something. And I believe this is going to be going on for 8 weeks. And it's going to be starting this upcoming weekend. Yes, 8 weeks starting on the weekend of September 12th, it says. So, got a lot to talk about there. And I'll give you all a promise here. I will not watch the matches until after I have figured out the bracketology. So, what I mean by that is, like, I will make sure to have all my bracket filled out, like, the way that I would have done it either way, like, before I know the results of any of these matches. So basically, we'll get the brackets tomorrow, I'll fill that out. I won't actually be talking about that on the show until Sunday, but I'm not gonna, like, cheat. I'm not gonna, like, you know, get to next weekend, watch these matches, then record the Weekender after seeing who won these first round matches and stuff like that. I won't do that. So we'll get a true bracketology type thing going. But I will say, my three choices to win out of these 16, I would like to see either Jonathan Gresham win, Freddie Ahai win, or Hot Sauce Tracy Williams. Those would be my three choices. I'd be completely fine with any three of those for different reasons. Gresham, I think, should be the world champion, but if he's not going to be the world champion right now, I feel like he should definitely be the pure champion. If they're going to continue to push Gresham and he gets into the world title mix, then I'd like to see Tracy Williams or Freddie Ahai. Yehai would be a great one because he's not currently signed to the company, and I'd like to see him get a Ring of Honor contract if that's where he wants to sign. Freddie Ahai, for those of you who don't know, is just, he's incredibly talented, incredibly great technical wrestler, and somebody that I've become familiar with over the last few years, mainly from the Chattanooga area and stuff like, and Atlanta, like action wrestling and that kind of stuff. So, huge fan of Freddie Ahai. Hot Sauce Tracy Williams, I thought, was an incredible IWTV champion back when it was the Powerbomb.tv title. Same with Gresham. They both held the belt. But Tracy Williams, I thought, was the one who really popularized that title belt. Like, his title reign was really felt like a true territorial wrestling champion. It felt like the national wrestling champion back in like the old days who went company to company and defended the title on the IWTV platform back once again when it was the Powerbomb.tv platform. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for what he did for that title and what he did for the platform, because the platform's killing it now. And I also want to give just a quick shout-out to Matt Sydal. He's in this tournament. Last night at All Out, if you watched it, that was a scary bump, botch that he did. Went for the shooting star, and it was really ironic, too, because like I was watching the show with a couple buddies, one of which who had never seen Matt Sydal. And when he came out, I was like, oh, this is pretty sick. Like, Matt Sydal is incredible. Like, they've been watching him forever. You know, wrestling the WWE as Evan Bourne, blah, blah, blah. And he gets up on the top rope, and I literally jinxed the hell out of him. I was like, oh, yeah, he got, like, this one of the sweetest shooting star press. He's going to hit it right off the bat. And he goes up there and just slips. And that's about the last thing you want to do for a first impression with a company. Luckily, I think most people probably already knew Matt Sydal from his incredibly long run on the indies or his run with the WWE. So hopefully it doesn't hurt him too bad as far as like the perception of the fans. But anyone who had just seen him for the first time, like my friend, for instance, that's a tough one to overcome. It's similar. So this will really age me, but like, it's similar to when I remember the first, and it's crazy I remember this, but I remember the first time I ever saw Christopher Daniels wrestle. It was in WCW, and it's a famous botch at this point, but I remember it happening. I remember watching it in my basement at my parents' house in Atlanta, Georgia, back, you know, in like the late 90s. It was either the late 90s or early 2000s. This was either like 99 or 2000 or 2001 when this happened. It was dying days at WCW. And Christopher Daniels went for basically a lion salt off the top rope instead of the middle rope, if I remember correctly, and he landed right on the top of his head. And it was the first time I'd ever seen him, and it took a long time, for whatever reason, that first impression, it took a long time for me to take Christopher Daniels seriously. Like, I had to see a lot of really great work from him in Ring of Honor and then Impact Wrestling before I was like, okay, I've completely forgotten about that botch. But I know that's a bit petty to say something like that, but especially as a kid, as impressionable as I was, you know, we're talking, I'm probably around 10, 11 years old at the time. I remember seeing that and being like, oh God, that guy sucks. Like, I just remember thinking that, and it wasn't the case, but I remember thinking that, and I could understand if somebody never seen Matt Sydal before, they watch All Out, they see that happen, and then they're like, oh God, like, oof, this guy. But I hope that is not what happens, because obviously he's ultra talented, just very, very, very unlucky at that moment. That's all I can really say. Just super unlucky at that moment. But yeah, I am super looking forward to the ROH Pure Title Tournament, and I will talk more and more about that in the upcoming weeks. We got basically 8 weeks. The next 8 weeks, we're going to be heavily talking about that tournament, and I'm really looking forward to it. There's a ton of awesome competitors in this one. It is a stacked 16-man bracket. Moving on, we have National Wrestling Alliance. So the reason that this is important is because the NWA had not updated their YouTube channel in over 2 months, up to just a little under a week ago. But 6 days ago, they finally uploaded a new video, then another one the day after. So they started a new series called NWA 5 on it, and it's episode 1, the top 5 most shocking moments from NWA Power. So it looks like they're doing some list videos, which they've done in the past. I like list videos. As somebody who, for those of you who don't know, I basically, I do a lot of freelance work, and the majority of the money I make for a living is editing list videos. So I actually might have hit up the NWA, to be honest, and see if they need some help with some of these videos. But I do this stuff, and it's really cool to see that the NWA is doing it. And then they also had another video, came out 5 days ago, titled Nick Aldis Response to the Challenge of Mike Bennett. And it is an episode of This is the NWA. And obviously, it's very much like I just said, you know, Mike Bennett has challenged Nick Aldis. He wants a shot at the National Wrestling Alliance World Heavyweight Championship. I'd imagine he'll get the title match, because I don't know why they'd be building this up otherwise. Michael Bennett has a lot of rebuilding to do, in my opinion. His WWE run did not go well by any stretch of the imagination. They basically jobbed him out, and for lack of better terms, they cucked him on national television. I mean, I don't really know how else to say it. It's just one of those things where his WWE run did not go good at all. And he's a very talented guy. He did a lot of great work in Ring of Honor, a lot of great work in Impact Wrestling before signing with WWE. I think that he could go to the National Wrestling Alliance, have a great match with Mike Bennett, and restore himself a lot with something like that. I could see him popping up in other promotions soon as well. I would not be surprised to see him in Impact or even potentially AEW in the future. But he does have some rebuilding to do, because similar to like what I was just talking about, Matt Sydal, there's going to be a lot of fans out there who did not know Mike Bennett's work prior to WWE, and all they've seen is the other stuff I've just mentioned. And I feel like he's got a lot of work to do. And part of the issue with Mike Bennett is that even if you follow wrestling closely and you're a hardcore fan, even if you were a fan of his prior to his WWE run and everything, even if you just follow him on Twitter, it's hard to get behind. Well, it was hard for me to get behind him when he was with the WWE because, for one, the way he was booked, obviously, but the other reason being that he continually talked about wanting to leave the company and then kept re-signing. And I get that they threw a lot of money at him, but there's also something to be said about someone who, you know, he got paid through his first contract. He was obviously very unhappy. I feel like he should have taken a chance on himself and went somewhere else. Now, I can't say definitively, right? Like, he has a family that he has to consider. He has a wife, obviously. He has a daughter. The financial security that the WWE was supposed to provide him, obviously it didn't because he's not there anymore. But the financial benefit of working for the WWE for him, I'd imagine that's what outweighed everything. He was probably thinking, well, you know, even if they're not using me on TV, at the very least, I'm getting a good paycheck and I can support my family with this. And obviously his wife, Maria Kanellis, is also part of the company, or at least at the time she was, and all that stuff. So it's like, I can't knock the guy on like a personal level, but it's just one of those things, like, as a fan, when you see that, you just kind of want to be like, well, if it sucks this bad, like, I mean, trust me, I'm not going to get into like all my personal stuff, but like, I've had dream jobs before that I've quit, like just straight up quit because I was not enjoying it anymore. Like, I loved it at one point, then things happen, it becomes really unenjoyable. And I know based on my own self-confidence that I can do things elsewhere, you know, and it's one of those things where, like, I wish Mike Bennett would have just kind of, like, bet on himself at that time. Because had he left WWE back then, he probably would be a part of AEW right now. And he probably would be in a good spot. And it's just one of those things. It's like, you know, hindsight's 2020, and no one could have predicted a national or a worldwide pandemic. I mean, so, you know, there's a lot of layers to it. And I guess my main point is Mike Bennett, I think, does have a bit to do perception-wise to rebuild his character and kind of his credibility in wrestling. But it can be done very quickly if he goes in there, does his thing, has some really good matches, really good promos, rebuilds his character a little bit. And I think he's going to wind up being fine. But I think it is going to be a little bit of a process. But that all being said, I think it's great that the NWA is putting out new content again. That's a very big thumbs up and a very good sign that the company is going to be, restarting again soon. Obviously, my biggest question throughout the last few months has been, what are they going to do after Dave Lagana left? He was a part of the whole speaking out thing. And it's one of those things where, like, I didn't know what was going to happen to their YouTube channel, because I think he was a really, really big part of that. He's a big part of the production, a big part of everything. He was probably the one doing the majority of the work, that, like, the really important decision-making and work. Obviously, Billy Corgan owns the company and he's a huge wrestling fan, and I believe he's heavily involved. But I think Dave Lagana was, like, very, very, very heavily involved too. So it's probably been a really big process trying to find someone or a whole team of people that can try to fill those shoes. And it's a good sign that they're starting to put up more content on their YouTube channel, because they're at least in the process of rebuilding this. And Corgan has adamantly said that he is not going to sell the company and the company is not going to close down. So I'm looking forward to the return of NWA Power in the near future. And I'm looking forward to going to shows live, because I'm in the area that they do these shows. So once they start letting fans in and stuff like that, I really hope to be a part of the live experience as well. Moving on, I have some predictions for you. So as I mentioned at the top of the show, there is a show happening tonight on independentwrestling.tv, September 6th, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Black Label Pro presents Through Being Cool. These are some quick predictions for you. We got Dan the Dad taking on Jake Griffin. I'm going to take Dan the Dad. For those of you who don't know, this is Danny Adams, who used to be the Millennial. He is one of the guys who runs, operates, and owns Glory Pro Wrestling out of the St. Louis area. A big fan of the guy. Guy that I owe a lot to professionally. People don't really realize, but he's one of the guys who gave me some really important interviews at a time that it was really important for me to get important interviews. Him and KLD, Kevin Lee Davidson, both those guys, I'm always kind of indebted to within the world of independent wrestling. Both guys that do a great job with Glory Pro Wrestling, and I'm really happy to see that Dan has been able to have the career he's had up to this point. I think there's still a lot more really great stuff around the corner for him. After that, we got Violence is Forever taking on Rip City Shooters. I'm going to take Violence is Forever for the win. It's very interesting that both members of Violence is Forever, Dominic Greeny and Kevin Koo, are now signed to MLW. Greeny's been there for a while, along with Filthy Tom Lawler as a part of, like, his stable, along with Eric Stevens. And we also now have Kevin Koo, who is Greeny's tag team partner, part of Violence is Forever. So a lot of big things coming up for these guys. They were formerly known as Sad Conf, and I'm such an OG fan that I actually have a Sad Conf t-shirt from a few years back. And it's one of those things, man, it's just good to see these guys that I've watched many times live in front of, very few people at some points, really making it for themselves. And I'm very happy for Koo and Greeny, and I'm going to take Violence is Forever to get the win here. After that, we have probably the match I'm looking most forward to out of this whole show. And this is a great show, but this match is just going to be fire. We got Lee Moriarty taking on Alex Zane. I'm going to take Alex Zane for the win, but this is a straight-up toss-up, 50-50, doesn't matter who wins. We are going to get an incredible match. Both guys are high-flying. Both guys can do technical stuff. Both guys are crazy. I mean, they get over everywhere they wrestle. These two guys are two of the major future stars of professional wrestling. I'm going to go with Zane, but like I said, it's just... regardless of who wins, the fans wind up winning in this one. It does not matter who wins the match at all. This is going to be an incredible match. It'll probably be the match of the night. There's a lot of great matches on this. I cannot understate this. There's a lot of great matches, but this is the one I'm most looking forward to. After that, Calvin Tankman versus Aaron Williams. This is another great match. This is going to be hard-hitting. I got to go with Calvin Tankman. Tankman actually won the Black Label Pro Championship last weekend or two weekends ago. He defeated, how did that all go down? He defeated Eric Stevens for the belt on Eric Stevens' own show. It was like Eric Stevens Presents, Black Label Pro, or whatever, however they titled it. But it was Calvin Tankman actually defeated Eric Stevens, hit him with,
I don't want to say the name of the move because of the profanity involved, but he hit basically a straight jacket pile driver for the win. Just awesome. Calvin Tamman, if you've never seen him, he's also signed to MLW. He's huge, but he can do moonsaults, and he's strong as hell, and he can throw you around, he can pounce you, he can move quick. He is very impressive, and he's another guy. The first time I saw him was probably 3 or so years ago in Nashville, and he has improved drastically since then. Like, he was solid then, but he has improved drastically over the last few years, and he is a guy that I can see as a legitimate main eventer on the indies and a legitimate star in a major promotion, in just a little bit of time. But he's going to really do great stuff with MLW, and I'm going to take him to get the win here over Aaron Williams in what should be a really good, hard-hitting match that I'm really looking forward to. Another match, I'm looking forward to all these. This is such a great card. We have Warhausen, the team of Warhorse and Danhausen, taking on Team Filthy. We got Tom Lawler and Eric Stevens. So Stevens and Lawler versus Warhausen. This is a tough one to call, but I'm going to say that Warhausen gets the win. I'm going to say that Warhorse gets the pin. I'm a huge fan of Warhorse, obviously the IWTV heavyweight champion. Danhausen, getting a lot of great stuff going for him on Ring of Honor lately, and the way that he's evolved his character over the years, I think has been brilliant, and the way he's marketed himself has been brilliant. Eric Stevens has been solid. I feel like I've been watching him forever at this point, but he's still as solid as he's ever been, maybe better than he's ever been. Filthy Tom Lawler, same kind of thing. I was a huge fan of his when he was with the UFC. He was a top-tier light heavyweight fighter, got totally screwed over by USADA and the company and yada yada. It's a whole story, but I love that he's landed in professional wrestling and he's been getting better, and he's somebody that I compare similarly to Matt Riddle for a lot of reasons, for a lot of obvious reasons. But Tom Lawler has been doing a great job in independent wrestling, and he's someone I could see taking a step to the quote-unquote mainstream or whatever sometime soon also. But it's four really talented performers in this one, but I'm going to go with Warhausen for the win. Tag team titles on the line. We got Besties in the World taking on Kylie Rae and Isaias Velasquez. I'm going to take Besties in the World to retain here. I've really got familiarized with them through Glory Pro Wrestling. They are an incredible tag team. One of my favorite entrances, entrance songs and the whole thing. Their whole entrance is wonderful. But some people probably love it. Some people probably hate it. Some people probably never heard the song. Some people don't know what the hell's going on. But I've always enjoyed it, and their matches are incredible. They are one of the best tag teams on the independent scene. And I'm going to take the Besties to retain here. And in the main event, I'm going to take Jake Something to retain the BLP Championship over Billy Starks. I just mentioned Calvin Tankman defeated Eric Stevens for the belt on the last show, but Jake Something came out and he basically cashed in a Money in the Bank type thing to beat Tankman for the belt after he had won it. So Something is the champion. He's taking on Billy Starks. Billy, she has been improving dramatically. And not that she was like bad to begin with, but it's one of those things where like she's still so young. I mean, she's like a legitimate teenager, and as far as I know, I believe she's like legitimately like 16 or 17 years old or something like that. I could be wrong about that, but I know she's very young and she's very well taken care of. Mouse, Robert Bellamy, her dad, he is one of the best guys I've ever met in wrestling. He's a super nice guy. He's the best photographer on the scene. He's the best wrestling photographer, period. I don't care what company you're talking about, what region or whatever, your website, whatever you're talking about. Mouse is the man, and he has given his full endorsement to Billy. I'm a fan of hers, and she keeps getting better and better. I think she's the future of women's wrestling on the independents, and I think she's going to become a major star. It's just going to take a little bit of time because of her age, but this is a great spot to be in, taking on Jake Something for the BLP Championship. I think it'll be a really good match. I think Jake Something's going to retain. And, it's a huge contrast between what Jake Something does here and what Jake Something is doing on Impact. On Impact, he's still getting some decent wins, but on the indies, he's really killing it. And I'm looking forward to this one. So, once again, I'm taking Jake Something to retain. And that's the show, at least the announced card that I have. And once again, you can watch this on IWTV tonight. It is Black Label Pro Presents Through Being Cool. Check it out tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. All right, let's wrap up this episode of The Weekender with a Being the Elite recap. Show starts off with the Dark Order. They're all together chanting, F Hangman, F Hangman. But they're not saying F. I'm just trying to keep it PG this week for whatever reason. Brody tells Silver to shut the F up, and he says he has one thing to say, then he himself says F Hangman. We get a couple of different scenes of the Young Bucks. They're plugging their book that's coming out soon, and then they go figure hunt at Walmart. They only find Kenny and Cody figures at the Walmart they go to, and I could hear under their breath, they're like, oh yeah, we're sold out again, sold out. That isn't the case. I don't know if they're working us or if they're why they're saying this, but I'd imagine those Walmarts never got Young Bucks figures because Walmart does not have their stuff together at all when it came to the launch of the AEW figures. So anyways, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, but yeah, the Young Bucks are figure hunting and they find Cody and Kenny, but they don't find themselves. We see a scene of the Dark Order. They're all in their locker room together. Five walks in, Alan Angels. He's wearing a blonde wig. And he tells Reynolds that there's a new hair guy in the Dark Order, and Reynolds and Five start arguing about who has better hair. Anna Jay walks into the room, and John Silver tries hitting on her. He's basically using the size of his legs to hit on Anna Jay. It isn't working. Anna asks Stu Grayson for money, and he hands it over. She thanks him, and you can tell that Stu Grayson is still obviously kind of the straight man in all of this as far as very little comedy, and obviously like the only one doing like actual good work within the Dark Order for the most part. Obviously, you know, Anna Jay is happy with Stu Grayson, and you can tell that she's getting really close to Brody Lee, so they want to impress Anna because she's gonna hopefully put in a good word with Brody. Silver starts arguing with Grayson, saying that he's the best kisser in the Dark Order because he wanted to kiss Anna Jay. Silver then wants Grayson to prove that he's the best kisser, and they're starting to get kind of close. And then Brody Lee walks in, and Brody basically tells them they better be talking about something else when he comes back into the room. So Brody leaves the room, comes back into the room, and he himself says, "I'm back and better than ever," which I think was a nod to Eric Bischoff's theme music in the WWE. I'm back and better than ever. Then we see Alex Reynolds. He is doing tap dancing, trying to impress the Dark Order. And the Dark Order is impressed, but Brody Lee is not. And Brody calls his moves dog shit. He says he's got dog shit steps. He tells Evil Uno to get the papers. And Uno's like, oh, okay, you want me to hit Reynolds? And he's like, no, hit Silver. And he throws a weak throw to the chest. Silver says he won't sell the throw for Evil Uno. Says the only person he sells for is the Good Lord because he's Dark Order AF. And he holds up the Dark Order hand symbol. The stuff comes in the background that the Young Bucks do every time they say they're Christian AF. The next thing we see is the Elite all together in their locker room. Everyone's flicking off Matt Jackson because of the Chili's deal that fell through. Matt shows his face, and his face is shaved, and it was pretty funny because Kenny's like, oh, I didn't realize we were talking to Matt's son, which was kind of funny. Matt has Cracker Barrel with him. He's like, I went old school, don't have a Chili sponsorship, but I do have Cracker Barrel, and it's like a really small meal, and there's no sponsorship attached to it. Nick Jackson basically tells him that he should go on a Merch Freak singles run, which I thought was funny. They all flick off Matt again. They're not happy about losing out on the Chili sponsorship and not getting anything from Cracker Barrel. Then we see Colt Cabana walking around backstage. His face is all taped up, and he's talking to a doctor. Says that his face is grotesque, and then he's still looking for a doctor to help him out, and he finds Britt Baker, but she's a dentist, and she will not help him. Then we see the librarians talking with Brandon Cutler. Basically, Cutler and Avalon are still arguing. Leva Bates comes up to them and says that they need to start working in a shade of gray. Not, you know, the white meat baby faces. Like, they can't be like Brandon and just be white all the time and live in the white. And they can't just be like the heels all the time. They can't be living in the black all the time the way that Avalon wants to. They need to work in a shade of gray. And I don't know if that's a play on like 50 Shades of Grey, because they're like, they're librarians and that's a book. I don't know if that's like where this is heading, or if I'm just like looking too into that, which I don't know how they'd really incorporate 50 Shades of Grey into this to begin with. But I do like the idea of like, okay, Leva has made it clear to them, like, doing it Brandon's way doesn't work, doing it Avalon's way doesn't work. We need to compromise here and get ourselves a win. And I think this could be a turning point for the Dark, or sorry, not for the Dark Order, for the, could be a turning point for Cutler, Avalon, and Bates. After that, we see the Dark Order and Christopher Daniels doing a vitamins commercial for 50 plus. Reynolds hands over Kool-Aid instead of vitamins. It turns out that John Silver actually ate the 30-day supply of vitamins all at one time, and he's just completely wigging out. It's really funny. He's just flexing and going crazy, and he actually corpses himself towards the end. He can't keep it together and just starts laughing at himself as the camera cuts off. Then we see another 50-plus segments for 50-plus segment. That's a mouthful, tongue twister. Cutler is changing the oil in his truck for the segment. We then see the Young Bucks talking about their eight-man tag team match. They're talking to Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy. Basically, it's like a lot of insider stuff where it's like, okay, who's going to bump and feed, and like who's going to sell, who's going to get the hot tag, blah, blah, blah. But they're all pretty much on the same page heading into their match, which they did wind up winning, and they wound up wrestling each other, the two teams, on All Out yesterday. After that, we see the best friends waiting on Brandon Cutler, who's walking down a hall. Orange Cassidy has a tripwire. They're basically trying to make him trip over something, and then they have like some weapons, like Chuck Taylor's holding a plastic knife. Trent had like some, it looked like a little, it almost looked like the poker that you use for like a fireplace or something. I'm not sure exactly what he was holding. But Cutler walks up and just walks right over the thing. Orange Cassidy pulls the wire basically way too late, then realizes it was tape anyway, so like it wouldn't have worked. Chuck says back to the drawing board, and then for the second week in a row, Chuck Taylor says back to the whiteboard, and then him and Trent high five each other, which is really funny. Actually, it's just so corny, it's funny. After that, we get a montage of Hangman costing the Young Bucks their match last week, and also the whole thing about Hangman getting kicked out of the Elite. And then the last thing we see on this episode is Kenny Omega wearing the cleaner sunglasses, the aviators. You see the reflection of him sitting in his car, and in like the rearview mirror, you see Kenny wearing the glasses. So a lot of foreshadowing there, a lot of teasing there, and another great episode of Being the Elite. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. Make sure to shoot me a follow over on Twitter at FightTalk_. That's FIGHTTALK_. Until next weekend, enjoy some professional wrestling.